Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. This is The Worldview. That's right. This is the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls. We never tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's good to have you with us. And big news around the McBurney compound. We have broken our first tractor. First farm implement broken on the farm. It was a neighbor's tractor. I never heard of anyone getting a flat tire on a tractor. It's unheard of. But we did it. And we also bent the drive shaft. So we've got repairs ongoing. And my neighbor told me, well, Doug, you're a farmer now. You got broken farm equipment sitting, and here we go. But that's our biggest problem. The biggest problem for me is that the flat tire was repaired, and then this afternoon when we looked at it, it was flat again. And so that will be taking up some time. But don't weep for us, because our problems pale in comparison to the problems of a world gone mad.
Wait, we have good news too.
We have good news? Oh, yes. Well, we did get our first batch of eggs. How many now? We actually ate breakfast. So after investing roughly $1,200 in a dozen chickens, We got about 45 cents worth of eggs this week. So the return on investment, it's a long-term thing.
The joy is priceless.
The joy of raising chickens is priceless. But that's right. And they're brown eggs, and they look a little different than the eggs you'd find on the store shelf. I have a story on that too. Maybe I'll read that now. That was going to be toward the end, but my extremely attractive audio engineer has driven the show in a different direction.
Oh,
I've got a story here from The Guardian in London, excoriating Americans because we throw away about half of our produce. That's right, The Guardian, which is a liberal rag full of homos and deviants over in England. They say Americans throw away almost as much food as they eat. Vast quantities of fresh produce goes into the landfill. And then they go on and on about Americans' unrealistic cosmetic standards for fruits and vegetables, primarily. Anything that has a blemish or is misshapen, The Guardian claims we throw it away. They say up to 25% of the average crop is thrown away or fed to cattle. Well, cattle got to eat too. Anyway.
We eat out of cattle.
Yes, we eat our fair share. We're shopping for cattle, by the way. We saw a herd of longhorns. They look very attractive. Maybe longhorns. The Guardian says that Americans are throwing away food, and it is a direct challenge to global efforts to fight hunger, poverty, and climate change. Everything affects climate change, apparently, to the perverts and the deviants over at The Guardian. You know what it is? It's a sign of opulence and prosperity that we throw away about half of our food. I mean, To try to give you some example, look at a river. As a river flows by, it would appear to the average bozo that most of the water is just wasted. It's just flowing downstream, and what's happening? We're not utilizing it to its full potential. It just happens to be there's a lot of water. You can't use it all. And in America, we've got a lot of food. And to have fresh food on your table means some fresh fruit's going to be thrown away, maybe half of it. Anyway, I do not have unrealistic standards when it comes to the appearance of my fruits and vegetables, but I know that that is an issue. A lot of people will not buy bruised fruits or misshapen fruits, and fortunately, we live in a country that is so blessed that we can pass by the blemish, misshapen fruit and go for the best-looking fruits. And I'm all for all of you. Let's see, I think there's a group in here where they go out and they beg the farmers for the food, and then they take it and they give it to the homeless and the poor. And it's probably wasting it on the homeless.
I'll give it to the cow.
Yeah, I think it'd probably be a better investment to feed that to livestock.
Yeah.
rather than giving it to bums and losers. But, hey, if that's what you want to do with your life, well, go right ahead. That's fine by me. But let's move on to the bigger news. Because there is now, it's, you can't deny it's a war against the police, another ambush out in Baton Rouge. At last report, 6 officers shot, 3 died. 3 have died so far. And now we have the new Black Panther Party. They say, Reuters reports that the new Black Panther Party says they will carry firearms for self-defense during demonstrations against the Republicans in Cleveland at their big convention. Several other groups, according to law enforcement officials in Cleveland, say they are going to carry weapons as well. Well, that's just wonderful. It's actually terrifying. It's actually terrifying. Officials in Ohio say that it's legal for protesters to open carry at demonstrations outside the convention hall. I would think that maybe that rule has to be changed. Just in the current environment, but call me an extremist. When police are being ambushed, I don't think large crowds should be allowed to gather with firearms. I'm sorry. I'm all for the Second Amendment. And I'm all for the God-given right to self-defense and the right to keep and bear arms. But if I were the police in Cleveland, I would say, no, you're not going to carry weapons. In fact, you're not even going to gather in large groups. How about that? And if you do, well, let's just take an example of this assassin in Baton Rouge. He was wearing all black, and his face was covered with a mask, at least one of the assailants, the one who they shot and killed. Thank the Lord above. And at church this morning, one of my friends told me, you know, that there's a lot of them out there in these Black Lives Matter protests where they wear masks over their face. They wear black outfits. And I think that if you're in a gathering or a protest and you are wearing a mask, you should be beaten with a stick and taken to jail. That's all. Yes, I understand you have a right to free expression. Now I'm going to hit you in the head with a stick and I'm going to take you to jail. Because the current environment has changed, young man. We're not going to allow that. But there we have it. All-out war against the police, and the new Black Panthers want to carry weapons. And the hapless liberals running America's cities don't know how to deal with it. They don't know what to do. And so more will be killed. But the police are able to defend themselves. And these assassins and terrorists, basically, should keep in mind that the police can defend themselves. In fact, let's go to Baltimore, West Baltimore to be exact. ABC News reported in West Baltimore this past week that officers were traveling in a vehicle when they heard gunfire. These 4 officers were in an unmarked vehicle and in plain clothes, but they were wearing their bulletproof vests, and the police drove toward the gunfire, as police are wont to do. Most civilians just run away from gunfire. The police drove toward the gunfire in West Baltimore last week. Upon arrival, the suspect opened fire on the officers. The officers returned fire, and the suspect was killed. No officers or civilians were injured. And this is a fearful thing that's happening because eventually a tipping point will be reached. And, well, it's just going to be very ugly. Very, very ugly. Especially as the attackers become more brazen. Because there doesn't seem to be the ability of the government to crack down on people who would ambush and kill police officers. That we're helpless. We're victims of our own politically correct interpretation of the freedom to assemble and petition the government for a redress of grievances. And being hamstrung in that manner, well, the war will continue. How hapless are we? How hapless is our leadership? Well, the FBI investigated the homo psycho killer down in Orlando who attacked the gay nightclub. They interviewed him back in 2013 and 2014. There was an investigation into the Muslim homo terrorist in Orlando. And FBI officials last week went through the files to see if they had missed anything. And, well, apparently they missed something. The FBI says that during their investigation, 2013-2014, they said they went right up to the edge of what they could do legally, and there was just nothing there. The FBI, according to this report from the LA Times, actively assesses and tracks more than 1,000 suspected extremists across the country. So that's happening right now. So there's 1,000 people that the FBI knows of who have made some sort of statements supporting Islamism or terrorism. Why can't these people be arrested and or deported immediately? As soon as there's a credible allegation that's proven that someone has stated that they are fans of the Islamic State or that they support Sharia or they support terrorism, why can they not be arrested and or deported? I do not understand that. Do we not understand that the rules have changed? There is a war on now. Freedom to assemble is very nice, and freedom of speech is a very enjoyable privilege. But if you're an Islamist and you're talking about it, you should be arrested and or deported. By the way, the homo psycho killer down in Orlando, he was a private security guard at the county courthouse. That's how hapless and defenseless we are. Co-workers warned that the psycho homo had claimed connections with Al-Qaeda and Hezbollah, and had told his co-workers he wanted to die as a martyr. So if I'm an FBI agent and I interview two or three people, and I hear the story that this Muslim homosexual freak wants to die as a martyr, I'm going to arrest him and or deport him as soon as possible with extreme prejudice, but that's not happening. Instead, we go right up to the edge of what we can do legally, and then there's a massacre. And then there's another massacre, and then there's an ambush on police, and then there's an Islamist attack, and then there'll be a bombing. And still, apparently, we don't know what to do, which is somewhat disturbing. I'm glad I don't live in the city, that's all. Let's see, the FBI interviewed the homo psycho killer twice. They even got a written statement from him in which he admitted he had previously lied to other agents. Why at that point was he not arrested and or deported with extreme prejudice? I do not know, but he was not. In the end, according to the LA Times, after a counterterrorism investigation that stretched from May of 2013 to March of 2014, that's almost a year for those of you who matriculated in the government schools, in the end, the agent and his supervisor concluded that the queer Mohammedan was not a threat and closed the case. So we're still vulnerable. And there's plenty of psycho, wacko, both foreign and domestic amongst us. And this is going to be an ugly summer. So what do the conservatives do? Not the conservatives, I shouldn't say that. What do the Republicans do? The Republicans, they have a plan to wake America up. That's right. Conservative champions of various stripes will rally the crowd for Donald Trump. I'm assuming this is in Cleveland. Yeah, in Cleveland. On July 19th, that's Tuesday night, at Cleveland State University. There's going to be a big gathering of what, the Gateway Pundit. The Gateway Pundit calls it a group of conservative champions. They are going to get together. Pamela Geller will headline. Now, she's going to appear with a flaming open homosexual on stage in front of rousing cheers and applause from Republicans. And standing next to the homo pervert, she will endorse Donald Trump, as will the homo pervert. Pamela Geller says, "I'm honored to appear with a group affirming that we need a big tent to defeat the leftist Islamic machine. Yes, she said, as Ben Franklin said, it's time to hang together or we will all hang separately, Pamela Geller said. She says it's time to put aside our personal differences. Hillary must be defeated. Yes, Hillary must be defeated, she said. This is the only goal. This is the only goal, is to defeat Hillary Clinton. So she's willing to go up on stage and stand next to Milo Yiannopoulos, the aforementioned open flaming homosexual. Geert Wilders will also be there. And, of course, Ann Coulter will be bringing up the rear. It's the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. That, by the way, Pamela Geller will be endorsing both the Flaming Homo and Donald Trump at the Wake Up LGBTRNC event. Not officially endorsed, I don't think, by the Republican National Committee, but it will get a wink and a nod from Mr. Trump and others who are going down. Along with the wreck there that was mentioned in the bump. Yes, thank you very much. Now, let's move away from the world gone mad. By the way, let me just punctuate that first segment. I was giving a presentation at a medical practice in Denver last week, and part of my presentation, I talked about something I learned about recently called targeted antibody treatment, in which proteins are being identified and then deployed against specific receptors in cancer cells in order to achieve apoptosis and kill cancer cells without destroying surrounding tissue. Now, the research itself has been going on for some 30 years, but recently, there have been some pretty dramatic instances, some dramatic cases in which targeted antibody treatment has been effective, and the idea could revolutionize cancer treatment. So I mentioned this in passing as I was discussing not a completely different technology, actually a very similar scientific method of action. Or something that I'm involved in, not curing any cancers or anything like that, but identifying proteins that can be deployed via various cellular receptors to do various things in the human body. And I could tell that most of the people in the room, not being oncologists, they weren't familiar with targeted antibody treatment. And I had their complete and full attention. And I said it could be just a few years down the road that we could cure diseases without destroying bodily structures and physiological systems. And I said, of course, if we can hold our civilization together, there's that. And everyone was a bit uncomfortable, but they got the point. Yes, there are incredible advancements just over the horizon if we can hold our civilization together, which it appears we shall not. I have to admit I'm quite pessimistic, at least in the short term, for America. In the long term, I'm quite optimistic. I understand all that. But in the short term, it looks like it's going to get very ugly before the dawn. Case in point, we go to the bad religion file, and this was a shocking headline to me. I found this hard to believe. The Methodists have elected their first openly homosexual bishop. In defiance of a ban that the Methodists have against homosexual bishops. That's exactly what I thought. What, the Methodists have a ban and they haven't elected? I would think they would have a flaming pope. Do the Methodists even have a pope? Whatever the Methodists have that's like the pope, I would be surprised if he, she, it wasn't a homo already. But apparently the Methodists have kept a thin veneer of religiosity over their pathetic religion. The Right Reverend Karen was elected.
Karen.
Well, yeah, the Right Reverend Karen was elected last week there in Scottsdale. They had a big United Methodist pile going. She is the pastor of Glide Memorial United Methodist Church in San Francisco. And she is the first open, flaming, shameless homosexual bishop in the 12 million member denomination. According to the Associated Press and the story that I am reading to you, the United Methodist Church is deeply divided over homosexuality. I was not aware of that. I thought the United Methodists had fully capitulated some 20 years ago, but apparently there are some regional districts that are not marrying off homos in their churches, and they're not electing homosexual. Well, probably they are. They all have homo pastors by now, or at least half of the choir. But they had drawn the line at the bishops. The conservatives in the United Methodist Church said right here, we will not elect homosexual bishops. That's all. Well, several other regional districts are openly defying the prohibition by appointing gay clergy. Oh, this implies that some Methodists' outfits have a ban on homosexuals in the clergy. And some United Methodist Church have a ban on same-sex weddings. I don't know. Maybe there are some conservative Methodists left in Texas, maybe. Possibly. I wasn't aware that there were any left. But there you go. So now we have the first openly flaming bishop there at the United Methodist Church. The big shock being that hadn't already happened. And so that's here in America. Let's go over to the Queering of England file, where in England they now have summer camps for transgendered teenagers. Yes, the camps, plural, I'm sorry, are the brainchild of a youth worker named Finn Grieg. He has a camp going in Essex every summer there in England. And Finn says that demand has been so high that he's running two camps, each with 35 young people age 11 to 24 and 10 cruisers. I'm sorry, workers who help the kiddos. The confused transgender, transitioning, questioning teens are assisted by 10 workers. The workers, by the way, listen to this. According to Finn Grieg, he's the youth worker helping the transgendered youth. He says all of our workers identify as trans in some way. It's open to interpretation. Because, I mean, hey, once you've allowed there to be a discussion about whether or not you're a boy or a girl, everything is just kind of in some way. Because nothing can really be for sure. Because if that's not sure, well, is anything sure? Can you even be sure you exist? Maybe Finn Grieg should be asked that. Do you know that you exist? He doesn't know if he's a boy or a girl, and he helps young, confused, mentally ill, and in some cases mentally deranged children to transition into complete mental incapacitation by asserting that they are the opposite sex. He says there is something significant about taking trans people away on overnight events. Uh-huh. I'm sure there is something significant. Probably felonious. In another time, of course. Now, everybody's confused. Well, I have a quote here, I think. This is a quote from youth worker Finn Grieg. He says, I shouldn't say he. That's somewhat discriminatory against the trans community to assert that because his name is Finn that he's a boy. But Finn says, quote,
as a trans person, I absolutely feared going away with groups. It becomes a very gendered exercise. It's all about changing areas and sleeping arrangements, even activities, being split into boys and girls. It's so confusing. Gender disappears at our camp, and it really doesn't matter anymore. Because being there in a trans-exclusive environment ironically takes the trans away. There's no... Nobody cares.
Because they all just pile up. I'll just leave all that aside. Anyway, youth camp, summer camp in England. To queer your child who may be confused already. Well, that's a problem right there. Let's come back across the pond to Target. You all remember the firestorm. A tempest in a teapot, really, over Target's alignments with Barry Ho and his bathroom policy. Do you remember that? They made a statement back in April when Barry Ho came out and said boys must be allowed to use the girls' room and vice versa, but mostly boys in the girls' room. That's what this is really about, primarily. Because most girls don't get this confused. Most girls are not victimized by homosexual men and they don't have their brains warped through sexual molestation at a rate that young boys do. That's why boys end up much more screwed up in this whole thing than girls generally. But back in April, Barry said that, hey, I'm not trying to tell anybody what to do, but you might want to keep your federal funds. And to do that, we want to recognize our trans neighbors and allow them to go to the bathroom of their choice, said Barry. And so Target, you'll remember, released a statement because nobody actually wanted to get up and talk about this. So they released a statement and said, we welcome transgender team members and guests to use the restroom or fitting room facility that corresponds with their gender identity. Those are the brave new world dwellers there at Target. And so they specifically welcome their guests to use whatever facility or fitting room that corresponds with their gender identity. Well, last Tuesday, a tranny was arrested on one count of felony voyeurism for taking pictures of a woman changing clothes in a dressing room at Target. Yes, Shauna Patricia Smith is in custody under the name Sean Smith. Why? Because the tranny's name is actually Sean. It's not Shauna. That's just part of her mental illness. He is in custody because he was in the women's dressing area taking pictures of women. After he transgendered to become a woman, meaning he was a lesbian trapped in a man's body, apparently. Which is, as I said, this can be. A woman reported that someone was taking pictures of her while she was inside the dressing room. Security footage was reviewed. The police investigated, and they busted this sick, twisted, perverted tranny taking pictures in the bathroom at Target. And is it any wonder that our civilization is coming apart at the seams? Yes, it's the Worldview. I'm back. And a little B3 could save us all. At least help us focus. No, not the vitamin. The Hammond. Yes. That's what we need. That's what we need is a little B3. We could all get past all this. We could all relate to one another. But I'm having a hard time relating. I must confess. I feel as though I'm an alien dwelling in a foreign land. Let's go to Kentucky, where the same-sex marriage fight is over in Kentucky, and Matt Staver is claiming victory. Yes. It seems. Now, you all remember the case of County Clerk Kim Davis. Well, she did not want to marry off homosexuals. At least, she didn't want her name on it. And so she asked the state for a workaround. And you remember, she was a hero of the right. She went to jail and all that. And everyone on talk radio and on all the talk television shows, the leftists dutifully attacked her as a homophobic hillbilly. And the right, they all said that she was the guardian of religious liberty and all that. And everybody played their part. And the kabuki dance went on for quite some time, and now it's all over. The 6th U.S. County Court of Appeals has ruled to vacate injunctions against Kim Davis and dismiss her pending appeals, giving her what Matt Staver and the folks at WorldNet Daily assert is a clear victory in a fight over same-sex marriage. The court, according to, well, the ACLU objected, so naturally the conservatives assume, well, we must have won. The ACLU is upset. That must be a victory. Yes. Kim Davis has received the accommodation she requested. County clerks are no longer forced to compromise their religious liberty and their conscience rights, says Matt Staver, her lawyer, who's already fired off at least one major fundraising letter on the heels of this ruling. So clerks are no longer forced to compromise on their religious rights and their right to conscience. They do still have to marry off the homosexuals. Now, that's one thing Staver didn't mention. Yes. You see, Kim had requested a religious accommodation of having her name removed from those documents. The governor, Matt Bevin, even issued an executive order providing that accommodation. The state legislature then made it a law that clerks will not have to put their names on the homosexual marriage licenses. Well, so that solves it. It's all over. We don't have to put our names on it, and then we'll just marry off the homosexuals. We'll allow them to get married in front of God and everybody and claim that their criminal, mentally ill lifestyle is somehow healthy and productive for society. And as long as our name isn't associated with it, we can say that we won. Yes. The legislature removed entirely a county clerk's name, personal identifiers, and authorization from any license. Yes. The ruling last week completes Davis's victory to remove the name and authorization of county clerks from marriage licenses. So now nobody's name appears on the marriage license. It's as if the marriage occurred in some sort of vacuum out in space. So this is what religious conservatives have been beaten down to, that we're going to assume that this is a victory. The clerk marries off the homo, but just a wink and a nod turns the other way, and everybody's good. And God looks down and smiles upon it all and says nobody has any guilt here for this vile, disgusting, gross sin against not only against God, but against humanity. Yeah, yes, that's what I said. The promotion of homosexual marriage is a crime and a sin against humanity, because it will lead to the destruction of our civilization, of our nation. What did Matt Staver have to say? Let's see. He pontificated widely at a press conference. He said our founding fathers believed in the right to follow one's conscience so much that they protected religious liberty in the First Amendment. From the Mayflower Compact to the Supreme Court's ruling in Obergefell, no court precedent or legislative mandate says that same-sex marriage must be held at every wedding venue, photographed by a specific photographer, celebrated by all bakers, or in this case, licensed by a particular clerk. Then and still today, Americans enjoy the free exercise of religion and the freedom to follow biblical principles. So the fact that Matt Staver has received a ruling that temporarily staves off the homosexualist assault on the Christian community, he says it's a victory. Now, Kim Davis doesn't have to put her name on the license. You, as a photographer, according to this ruling, you don't have to take pictures at a homo wedding. And you, Mr. Pastor, you don't have to marry off any homosexuals. That's the victory that Matt Staver is claiming he has won for Kim Davis down there in Kentucky. And this is a minor fig leaf, a minor bump in the road for the homosexualists. And Matt Staver is just one of their useless, I'm sorry, did I say useless? It's a little Freudian slip there. He's a useful idiot for the homosexualists is what he is. And that's one of the most pathetic court cases I've ever been witness to. And one of the saddest devolutions of conservative thought that has ever been carried out in public. It's very sad. So it's merely a signal that the homosexualists have again won. Because what they've done is they've convinced conservatives and Christians that they can provide us with a legalistic workaround and they can continue to destroy one another and defile one another in public and nobody can do anything about it. Because, we gave you your accommodation, Mr. Christian. Sit down and shut up. Yeah. All right. Meanwhile, in the wake of this alleged victory, the Washington Post has launched a smear campaign against important Christian leaders. That's what Breitbart calls these people. Important people who espouse biblical morality on homosexuality. The Post has labeled them enemies of equality. Yes, and I'm not on this list, which is pretty disappointing. Josh Duggar is on this list. Okay. James Dobson, Kim Davis, Tony Perkins, Tom Minery. Let's see. Hey, they got one right. They got Gordon Klingenschmidt on here. He's the only one I've read so far who actually would stand up against the homosexualist onslaught. Anyway, The Washington Post released a nice color chart of all the enemies of equality. And a writer there at the Post states that there is a vast right-wing conspiracy out to deny gays in America their humanity and their dignity. There is a conservative cabal actively working the levers of power to block their rights. Yeah, well, we could only wish that that were the case. I believe that this article, it came out in the Washington Post last week on the 12th. This homosexualist writer, Jonathan Capehart, obviously excoriating these alleged conservative leaders. In my opinion, just so these leaders can release a statement in the following days and weeks saying how friendly they are to homosexuals and how much they love gay people. Gay people should have equal rights, but not special rights. Let's see, they've been accused of, well, I really don't care about all this. Let's see here. Who all's on the list? The Alliance Defending Freedom. I believe that's Matt Staver and his group, right? Alliance Defending Freedom. Alliance Defending Freedom. They call one of the hubs of the coordination against the homosexuals. National Christian Foundation, the Family Research Council, Liberty Council. The Washington Post accuses all of these organizations of aggressively working to chip away at the equal rights of LGBTQA Americans. But that's just not the case, folks. If there were an active conspiracy against the homosexualists, It's the most failed conspiracy in the history of such things. These groups don't want to limit the rights of homosexuals, and they don't want to protect the rights of Christians to practice Christianity. That's not what they're about. They're about making a handsome living, churning out the litigation involved in such matters. That's what they're really about. Two predictions. All of the above groups will take this chart and this Washington Post story, and they will send out a fundraising letter to all their members urgently, letting them know we're under attack from the Washington Post. And they'll raise quite a bit of money off that. If that fundraising letter hasn't already gone out, I will eat this sheet of paper. Also, at least half of these leaders will come out with some statement in the coming week or two against this article, claiming that they do not stand against equality for homosexuals. That's not what they're about. Yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. And there you go. And that's why we're basically on the road that Greece and Rome were on. Great world empires crumble when sexual immorality is legalized and then promoted, because there's just no stopping that. Once the boundary of sex within marriage is allowed to be violated publicly and legally, that's the death knell of a civilization. Do these people not understand that it's marriage that holds society together? There's nothing else. There's no other institution. The Alliance Defending Freedom is not going to save America. No. The National Christian Foundation, the Family Research Council, are they going to preserve our civilization? No. There's only one institution, and that's the institution of marriage. And not a single one of these organizations has effectively fought against legalized sexual immorality. They've, as I said earlier, they've simply made a handsome living churning out the litigation surrounding such matters. Oh, I hate to stop it, but we got to stop. We got to get back to the show. And you know he's just going to go on like that for quite some time. Yes. Thank you very much, he said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. All right. Now, this is from the, what is this? This is from the Strange Delusion file. It's a relatively new file. And this is surrounding... This is another story about the Zika virus, the first case, according to the veteran New York Times. The first case of female-to-male sexual transmission of the Zika virus has been documented where else but New York City, of course. The disease, they say now, could spread beyond the countries where it is said to be largely transmitted by mosquitoes. There has been growing concern, according to the Times, about sexual transmission of Zika. And now that you have a female-to-male transmission during sex, well, we know now that this is, it's a venereal disease. That's all there is to it. It's a textbook venereal disease. Let's see, the Times says, the Zika outbreak continues to baffle and surprise leading experts. Yes, prompting officials to rethink once again
the guidance for healthcare providers and the general public. So they're on the verge of being able to say, okay, it's VD. We're just going to come out and say it. We were praying it wasn't VD, but it's VD. And you people should stop jumping in the sack with every other person you meet at the club, okay? That's the guidance that should be issued. The guidance, well, the guidance that should be issued goes a lot further than that. These people should be handed the Book of Romans. That should be your guidance when it comes to Zika. That would help a lot. Zika, here we go. Even though this is just one case, the Times says, the fact that the disease can be transmitted from women to men widening the pool of those at risk will have to be factored into the response from public health officials. So what will the public health officials do? They'll probably hand out more rubbers. That's all. Yeah. They'll hand out bottles of off and rubbers, and that's going to be their response. So, folks, Zika is a venereal disease, but neither the Times nor the CDC can bring themselves to say what it is, and that maybe people shouldn't have sex all the time with all kinds of different people. Maybe people shouldn't have sex outside of marriage. That's what the CDC should say if you want to be safe. Forget the Zika virus. What about the super gonorrhea? I mean, you got super gonorrhea right there. You got venereal warts. What, genital warts spreading like wildfire all over the country. What do? They hand out rubbers and tell people to have fun. It's unbelievable. That's the strong illusion file. Yes. Zika has been officially classified as a venereal disease by the research staff at the Weekly Worldview. Thank you very much. Not one of your tax dollars was used in the study to confirm such a thing. Now, from the, I don't know what to call this. This is dark irony. This is from the dark irony file. When I was preparing for the broadcast, I assumed that the terrorist attack in Nice, France, in which another Islamist, this time in a vehicle, drove over people at a festival in Nice, France, slaughtering them. I had assumed that would be the top story of the week. But that was before the ambush in Baton Rouge, and the teetering of our civilization on the brink of some sort of civil unrest. I'm not willing to say civil war, because I don't think we've gotten to that point yet, but civil unrest could be a long, hot summer. Let me just put it that way. But this terrorist attack in Nice, France, definitely makes one pause and realize that things just aren't going to be the way they were before. And not for quite some time, because this whole Islamic terrorism situation has been allowed to fester and boil. And now, forget Zika. You want to talk about a viral outbreak. Terrorist attacks every time you turn on the television. It seemed this week, every time I turned on the television or the radio, that there was another policeman being shot, or there was an Islamist blowing up or burning or killing or stabbing or beheading someone. It's been a very tempestuous week. And now, so from the dark irony file, the rampage in Nice has been described as an act of terrorism by officials in France. Ironically, the sequel to 50 Shades of Grey had been filming in Nice, France, on the day of the attack. Now, you may or may not be familiar with 50 Shades of Grey. It's basically a pornographic novel that was turned into a pornographic movie, and it made so much money for the pornographers who churned it out, they're filming the sequel, and they were filming it in Nice, France, ironically. The cast and crew, if you're concerned, they have been accounted for, and they are all safe. Yes. It is unknown if production will be suspended. Do you want to bet production will not be suspended? No, they'll light a candle, and they'll release some balloons, and then they'll go back to making their pornographic movie.
A dark irony. Pop star Rihanna also had been stripping in the area and has canceled her Friday night strip show that she was going to give in Nice, France. She actually canceled her show. So Rihanna apparently has some sense of shame still. Huh? Well, I mean, people have to be slaughtered and lying bloody strewn throughout the town, but at least at some point she says, well, wait a second. So maybe there's some hope for Rihanna, but the producers at 50 Shades of Grey, no. Straight to hell with Jet Rockets. That's the dark irony file. Now, into the war file, because there is serious business going on. In addition to all the tension, the global tension around Islamic terror attacks, and the domestic tension around people lying in wait for and ambushing our police officers, threatening the foundations of our civil society, there's those tensions. And as if that were not enough, China is now threatening to impose an air defense zone. Yes, they've threatened to declare an air defense identification zone over disputed waters. The Hague ruled last week that China had no legal basis to lay claim to almost all of the South China Sea, as they have been doing for quite some time. The court at The Hague ruled against China on virtually every substantive point in the case brought to the court. And China responded saying that they would refuse to accept the decision, which puts everyone in an interesting position because the court in The Hague has no power to enforce its rulings. China, on the other hand, has a navy in the South China Sea. They have an air force around the South China Sea. So everyone's in a very difficult and awkward situation right now. The court said, this is how we rule. And China said, we don't care. And China has all the guns. Not a good situation. By the way, for those of you who may not know, and I did not, an air defense identification zone is a zone which would require all aircraft entering that designated airspace to identify themselves. So China said, hey, we're going to impose an identification zone. So America responded by sending two B-52 bombers through the zone that China is threatening to make an identification zone. And the B-52s flew through there without identifying themselves to China, which was appropriate, by the way. The foreign minister of China? Let me see. The president is Xi Jinping. There's another fella here. His name is Mr. Liu. And he is the vice foreign minister. He's basically a flunky in the Chinese government. Listen to what he said. He said, we hope that the other country will not take this opportunity to threaten China and work with China to protect the peace and the stability of the South China Sea and not let it become an origin of the war. Well, that's not funny. It's not funny at all. In a situation like this, when a governing official uses the word war, even in halting English, it's not good.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, so there we have it. The Chinese, one of their foreign minister flunkies, mentioning the word war, which I'm just here to tell you, folks, that's just not a good thing. Sad. It is sad, and it's not funny. Stop it. I know. Now, this story, this is funny. All right, now, let's go to 29 Palms, California, where I dwelt for some time. And what we have here is a story about hapless parents, once again. 29 Palms, by the way, a wonderful and beautiful place to go. I was there from December, or maybe January, to May. And that's a good time to be in 29 Palms. So if you have to live there. Especially if you have to live outside, which I had to do a little bit. Most of the time, no. I was a very civilized member of the armed forces. I made it a point to rarely live outside. And in 29 Palms, you did not want to live outside. Well, you wouldn't want to live outside right now because it's hot. It's extremely hot in 29 Palms. We used to go to a Mexican place there. I'm trying to remember. I have it in my mind that this restaurant was called Chipotle. That's what we called it. Chipotle. And it was right next to the motel where when we were allowed off base, we would go and there was a pool. And it's in my mind that the restaurant was called Chipotle. That's what we called it. And it's not related in any way to the modern restaurant chain with the politically correct name of Chipotle. We didn't try back then to accommodate various cultures. And we were just Americans. And it looked like Chipotle, we called it Chipotle. We didn't ask why the L and the T were confused. We just pronounced it the way we pronounced it. And I think it was a local joint. I don't think it was related in any way. I don't know why I got off on that. Oh, yes, 29 Palms, a mother and her boyfriend. Let's see, apparently they were punishing her children because they're not his children because he's just her boyfriend. Now, they were apparently living in a pickup truck in 29 Palms. They've been described by local officials as local transients, which seems to me to be a non sequitur. Because transient, by definition, doesn't that mean you're passing through? You're transient, right? But these are local transients. So I can tell you what that actually means. These are white trash losers who look like they're bums, but they actually live there. Because they're just losers is what they are, local transients. They were living in their pickup truck, and they were punishing their children. Now, police don't know why the children were being punished, which is not surprising because local transients generally are not aware of much having to do with reality a good portion of the time. We have our share of local transients here in Colorado. Now, I used to hang out with this hippie chick when I first moved to Colorado. Her and her husband, they could have been described as local transients. They lived in a trailer. Number one, that was painted olive drab, army green. And they used to head up to Nederland every summer. Now, those of you in Colorado may not be aware, there was a fire up in Nederland that destroyed 8 homes. This is western Boulder County in the foothills of the Rocky Mountains. There was a fire up there last week that was quite the story all week, and it was scary. And 8 homes were destroyed. And the two guys they arrested, the hapless idiots who left their campfire going, they looked like the picture of a local transient. Now, these guys were from Alabama, so they were genuine transients. But see, they joined this regular flow of Denver metro area bums, losers, hippies, and druggies who go up to Nederland every summer. And they camp, and they urinate and defecate all over nature, and they leave garbage everywhere. Anyway, I know these people. So now that you have a picture in your mind, think of every exit ramp in the Denver metro area. Okay, picture that in your mind, and the guy and or girl standing there, that's what a local transient looks like. And we're loaded with them here in Colorado now that we've legalized dope. But hey, back to 29 Palms, this woman and her transient boyfriend were punishing her 3 young children by leaving them in the desert in 29 Palms. Yes, the kids said, by the way, this is a 7-year-old girl, 6-year-old boy, a 5-year-old boy, discovered near noon by the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department, said that they'd been left in the sun with no shoes and no water for about 45 minutes. The parents were right up the street. The police located the parents right away and pistol-whipped the man immediately. No, they didn't. Although this, if there was ever a pair that need a pistol-whipping, it was these two. But the kids were recovered, and, well, we don't know all the details, and I don't even know why I did that story except that the term local transient had caught my eye. I didn't know how to relate to that, okay? A local transient. Anyway, now I think I've got my mind around it. And I hope you have too. The good news is the kids are okay. The bad news is that the couple was not horsewhipped. All right. Now, last week I mentioned that a couple of hundred of Penn State's alumni had signed a petition to return the statue of Joe Paterno to the grounds of Penn State University. Well, Breitbart is reporting that newly unsealed documents say that Penn State head coach Joe Paterno fully knew of the child sex abuse that Jerry Sandusky was involved in and turned the other cheek, so to speak. The documents were unsealed as part of a lawsuit by the insurance companies. Filed by the university against their insurance companies because the insurance companies are refusing to pay any of the nearly $100 million in settlements given to 32 of Sandusky's rape victims. This guy raped 32 boys. Let's see here. The insurance company says that they should not have to pay because the university systematically hid the allegations. And they never told the insurance companies what was going on. Anyway, specifically, John Doe, number 150, testified that he specifically told Paterno that Sandusky had sexually assaulted him, and Paterno ignored it. In another document, assistant coach Joe Serra testified that he walked in on Sandusky actively raping a 13-year-old boy. And Serra turned around and walked away. A weight room assistant named Kevin O'Day witnessed Sandusky with a boy. I'm not even going to go into that. By the mouth of two or three witnesses, a thing is established. And Jerry Sandusky was a child molester, and Joe Paterno knew about it. And he shouldn't have his statue returned to Penn State. In fact, his name should be blotted out from all of history forever, is what should happen to Joe Paterno and Jerry Sandusky, and for that matter, the entire Penn State organization. Just get out of here with that. All right, that's it, folks. That's it. That's the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com. I want to thank my friends at AmericanRightToLife.com, and of course my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen. He just makes it all happen. That's all. I just wanted to end the show a little differently. Should the Lord tarry, we will return. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.